This is the TSN MMA Show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Demetrius breaks the record. Ferguson has his sights set on McGregor after capturing interim lightweight gold. GSP and Bisping are coming to Toronto, and so is Dana White. Joe is in China, but we have a main event replacement host. That's M-A-N-E. Elias Theodoru, UFC middleweight undefeated against Australians, steps in as a late-minute replacement. You like that against Australians?
Yes.
It's a good point to make with your upcoming fight with Dan Kelly.
It is true. I'm looking forward to keeping the streak going.
How many Australians have you beat?
Two at this point.
It's like a collection.
Exactly. I have two at this point, and I'm going to collect the third. And I'm going in hostile territory. So, again, they came over to us, and it's kind of fitting that I'll be fighting Dan in Australia in the future, nonetheless,
yes.
Like I kind of was talking about, where technically I'll be fighting November 18th, but it'll be November 19th in Australia, and I'll have to fight at like noon or something like that, or just a little bit earlier.
The card starts at like 9 a.m. Australian time or something.
Thankfully, I'm a little higher on the card, so at least I won't, at least I'll see the sun when I wake up.
Right. Well, that's a good thing. You'll want that. It's an indoor arena, I'd imagine?
Yep.
Okay.
For sure.
Who else is on that card?
Mark Hunt.
Right.
Then there is, I'm blanking here. I guess I'm being a little selfish and only thinking about the man in front of me.
You're laser focused on Dan Kelly.
The man in front of me.
He's fighting Tybura, if I'm not mistaken, right? Marcin Tybura.
Yep.
That'll be a fun fight.
Yeah, it definitely will. JoJo. JoJo will be fighting my
that
fellow
was just announced.
Yep.
Beck Rawlings.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, glad.
Is that at flyweight? That's what I was curious about. Do you know?
I think it's 125. I think it is.
JoJo cuts so much weight to get to 150.
Yeah.
She's like not the same fighter.
Women in general. Mm-hmm. We all saw... we've seen many different horror stories in the past. And Valerie. Exactly. Valerie's the case in point. And that probably took years off of her career, potentially, because of whether women like to or not, they're a baby-making machine. At least that's what their body tells them, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been in the situation where helping a female fighter cut weight, and then all of a sudden nature calls, and it is that time of the month for them. And at that point, your body just refuses to cut weight. It's holding all the weight, and it just becomes a real, real test, even more so than most.
Wow, that's pretty scary, actually. It must be like, why did this have to happen today?
Exactly, of all days, I mean, 30 days.
Yeah, and I guess you can't really plan that when you're asked to take a fight either. You can't be like, 26, no, that's not ideal.
A female would be much more qualified to kind of figure that out. I think what ends up happening is it takes months in advance to basically, because you can time your cycle very much. And then you can even time it to the moon and whatnot. So it's very, very interesting what you can do to one's body if you do the preparation. But especially in the regionals when you're trying to, get any fight, and especially in the lower weight classes where women, who are kind of in between 105, 115, they got to take what they can get. And that was kind of the case. And, all the power to them. It shows why, in some ways, women are even more tough in mixed martial arts because, again, they're not only fighting the person they're fighting, they're fighting their body.
Right. Yeah, that's it's pretty crazy. I mean, even Ronda used to cut a lot of weight to make 135.
Yeah.
She was the champion for a long time.
She was at 145 before she came to the UFC.
But refused to fight Cyborg at 145.
Boom. For hindsight's 2020, and it's for obvious, a good thing that she didn't. It's one of those things where I think, especially because she in her judo career was in that weight, but also I understand the sharpening of mixed martial artists cut a lot more weight than, let's say, boxers because, again, we don't have that many weight classes. So that's one of the points where adding more weight classes, especially for females. That's the thing I think we could really touch on. Obviously, you can look at my weight class and kind of a midway in between with light heavyweight is an opportunity. And then, a heavyweight, then a super heavyweight, which would be like 230 and above, right? Like a Crow Cop, to me, would be the perfect, heavyweight, and then
even Stipe could probably make.
Exactly. And then there's
235 and up,
exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's what a lot of people are talking about: is adding a 165, 175, ditching 170, adding a 195 potentially.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of options. I don't know if 195 is that necessary. I think if you're 185 and 205, I don't think there are a ton of people struggling to make 185.
No.
And a ton of people struggling to make 205.
I think you're 100% right.
But,
I think you're 110% correct. It has to do with your frame. Like, I'm the size, I'm just as big, if not bigger, than Misha Serganov. It's just his frame is just, you know, it's a couple inches higher, taller, and a couple inches wider in his reach. Right?
Right, and so that's all it takes.
That's all it takes. It's that, you know, game of inches. And it's one of those things where, you know, you and I kind of talked about it beforehand, where it is in some ways a weight cut is, you know, cheating in the capacity, but we all agree, it's agreed upon cheating in the sense that we're not, I'm not really 185. I'll be 185 and the next day I'll be 205, 210, right? Mm-hmm. Or somewhere like just kind of somewhere in between.
You gain like 20 pounds, 25 pounds. Yep. Yeah.
But 10 of that is water and then 10 of that is the actual nutrition. Like it's once I hit south of 200, then my body knows what's happening. Right, like it's kind of like, oh, we've been through this before. It has the muscle memory, and I kind of compartmentalize, and that's when you can bring in the spiritual aspect of it, where I'm breaking myself down and building myself up. But then there's also some commissions that keep you within a threshold. You can't go more than 15 pounds. I've heard of fighters where they weighed in, and then they ate the night before, and they woke up and they realized, oh my god, I gotta do a light cut just before my fight too, because they gotta lose like 5 pounds of water.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this the reason why this is topical, of course, Kevin Lee barely makes weight. I don't know if you saw the video of the guy in Pancrase who looked like, basically, I mean, he looked like he was going to die.
A zombie. He was a zombie.
He was a zombie. That was scary.
Yeah.
Seeing something like that in the world of weight cutting. Did you have Thanksgiving dinner? You're in fight camp. Did you have a big dinner for Thanksgiving?
I did. I stuck mostly to the protein. My mom makes amazing American yams, too. She's originally from Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
It's unreal. It's like a staple in our family. Like, because we have, I think we had like 30, 40 people at my parents' house. Like, and that's now smaller than what it used to be. Mm-hmm. Because you know, some
like
of my
feast.
Cousins, some of my cousins now have the kids and their own family that like you know on their
on
wife's
the side.
Exactly, or whatever. So there used to be like 60, 70 Greeks at our house at any given time at one point. And my mom still cooks as if, you know, they could be here at any point.
They might show up, You got a nice doggy bag to bring back with you to Montreal?
Everyone has to. Yeah, I know, exactly. Mm-hmm. Not the American yams. I only had a couple of them.
So here's the big question. Was there tiramisu?
No, there was not tiramisu.
Because tiramisu seems to be like the cursed food for people trying to cut weight. We had Khabib having it on Embedded, and he fails to make the scale. Kevin Lee bragged about having it the day before the weigh-in. He shows up 1 pound heavy. Although he did get the time to cut it and was able to cut it successfully.
But, and he also did have it the night afterwards, right? Because they took a picture of him after weigh-ins eating it.
Oh, really?
As well.
So on Friday, too. Wow.
Well, and I think the tiramisu is specifically just Tony Ferguson's problem. Like,
Ferguson, they should have it in the contract.
No tiramisu.
If you're going to fight Tony Ferguson, you can't have tiramisu at any time leading up to the
USADA
game.
USADA comes over.
Yeah, exactly. Checking your fridge. Checking your sugar levels. Yeah, with USADA, it's pretty interesting because with weight cutting, I think to me, and this probably wouldn't benefit you at all. In fact, it would be a hindrance to you. But if you really want to wipe out extreme weight cutting, when USADA goes to test people, they should weigh people. Weigh people and see, make sure that they're within a percentage of what their weight class is.
No, it's definitely true. Obviously,
it wouldn't work well for you, though.
It wouldn't work well with me. And then that's when, at that point, obviously, it's usually when people, when it affects you, then you start pushing.
But then everybody would have to move up, wouldn't there? There would be a domino effect, right?
Yeah,
like Cormier could probably no longer fight at light heavyweight if they instituted that, unless he decided to really stick to like a very trim diet and walk around at whatever, 220.
Yep.
Let's say it's 15%. So if it's 15% of 205, You're still looking at 25 pounds. You're still like 230 or something.
For me specifically, it'd be just over, I think now they allow 8%, which is technically 201. So with ease, 205, that just means I'm in shape 365. That's all that really means, right?
Right.
And it would take a little bit I'm getting used to in regards to the weightlifting component because I'm someone that can naturally add muscle. Like I can literally just add 15 pounds of muscle in the span of a month just because of genetics. Like that's just kind of how it works. My brother is even larger than me. My brother's 6'3", 245 pounds.
He's not a fighter though.
No, a lover. He owns his own business. He's had a couple fights. He did train. He loved it, you know, following in his bigger brother's footstep, but his passion was his business. It was really cool because we both did a summer job at a moving company, and he was kind of just like inquisitive and just like, that's what they're doing. He goes, I could do this. Mm-hmm. And now I'm happy to say he is, I believe, on he used to have a partner, and now he's separated and he's doing it all fully on his own. And I think he has somewhere to 25 and 30 employees.
Wow, so okay. He's actually running a big business. And it's a moving company?
Yep, moving company. He has, I want to say, about 20,000 square feet of also storage as well. Strong movers. I mean, it's actually not strong movers anymore. It's actually Porter Moving.
Porter Moving.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
throwing it out there.
Free plug. In the local market. If you're listening to this in TSN 1050 in Toronto.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Check out Elias's brother's business. What's your brother's name?
Michael.
Michael.
Yep.
Give Michael a call. Porter Moving. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, look at that. See? It stuck with me. It's good advertising.
There you go.
So with Kevin Lee, he does get the extra hour to make weight. The UFC rule is that you don't. But they're able to adopt the commission rule if they'd like. They have the option of taking on the commission rule. So in this particular case, they opted to go with the Nevada state rule. Does that rub you the wrong way at all?
No, they went with the money. I totally understand. They want the main events.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, last week especially with what happened in Las Vegas, you know, having a good event is definitely in theirs and the city's best interest.
For sure. The idea, obviously, the tragedy of Las Vegas and the, you know, what they were trying to put out there and the idea Vegas Strong and the whole card being put together. Although there were still a couple of fights that fell through, unfortunately, like Nick Lentz was one of them. Issues.
Yeah.
Derek Lewis as well. That's a tragedy because this is obviously the second time it's affected him, and who knows where his career is, right?
Right.
The fact that you can't even show up at the
Get out of bed, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty crazy.
Especially when you see such a, you know, I would say a lovable monster, but like in the idea, like he's such a powerhouse and a devastating heavyweight, but to be crippled, technically or like figuratively or whatever the case may be, in the sense that you're about to go to war but can't even get out of bed. Yeah. It shows how strong you can be, but how vulnerable we can be as well.
Right. Well, especially with what he went through during his fight camp with the hurricane and helping out a lot of people in the Houston area. It's always sad to see something like that happen. And then, of course, Mark Godbeer comes over from the UK, and he gets his show and win money. But apparently they're looking to reschedule that fight with him and Walt Harris at UFC 217. So that's not confirmed yet. But according to Jim Edwards of MMA Uno, that's where they're looking to go next.
Awesome.
Which would be good. I mean, you know, it's good for him. Gets on the Madison Square Garden card. There's still a main card spot available there. So maybe that could end up on the main card at UFC 217.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So who knows? I asked Dana White about it in the post after the fight. I said, you know, it's TBD versus TBD for 217. Do you have anything crazy planned? He's like, no, nothing crazy, but you never know with us. Who knows?
Yeah, no. The UFC is a very reactionary company, and anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, yeah, if opportunity knocks, they're opening the door, that's for sure. Let's look at UFC 216 from top to bottom. Maybe we'll skip a couple, but in terms of the main event, Ferguson versus Lee, this is kind of how I expected this fight to go. The reason I say that is I knew that Lee was going to try to take Tony down. You know, Lee is one of the best MMA wrestlers in the sport. He was able to take Ferguson down, but Ferguson's guard is a very deep, dark place. I said this to Eddie Bravo backstage afterwards. I go, that's a deep and dark and dangerous place for someone to dive into. And Tony Ferguson maximized that with a submission in the third. Might have been able to get him sooner, actually. And I noticed he didn't go into the rubber guard in some situations, but he was patient and he waited for Lee to kind of burn out and took full advantage.
No, that's exactly same ways. I basically kind of saw Kevin Lee's best way to win would be something of the idea of like taking him down, dumping him, and just trying to get up on the points, right? And then obviously catch him anywhere in between. Obviously, Tony Ferguson is just dangerous. That's why I thought he was going to win, because he's just a savage. I think that no matter where the fight kind of goes, he kind of loves the getting hit in the face and then giving it back twice as much.
Yeah.
And you could really see, especially with, you know, the fact that he kind of like puts up shop at the top of Big Bear and just just goes full clip all camp. And this is what he was put on earth to do. Like that's one of those individuals that you think that this is what he was designed to do.
And he's just so good at it. And he's so unpredictable.
Yep.
He's the consummate MMA fighter. He's just gotten better and better. He keeps adding more and more to his game. And not to take anything away from Kevin. I mean, he had the bad weight cut. He had staph infection. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how good of a Kevin Lee we saw there. One thing I did notice that, you know, right off the bat was when he was taking Ferguson down, I go, he really needs to train to get into side control right away. You know, we saw in that fight between Jessica Andrade and Claudia Gadelha, whenever she was taking Gadelha down, she was getting into side control. And when you've got guys, or women in that case, that have very strong guards, that's what you want to do. Now you're controlling them, and you're not putting yourself in any danger. I thought he was putting himself in a lot of danger in a lot of different situations in that fight. And I don't think it really seemed to faze him, but I don't think he thought he'd get caught.
Yeah, well, no one does for the most
right.
part, right?
Yeah.
And I think you have a very good point in regards to the side guard, side control, especially because you can also just lift up the leg as well. So you take the hips up on under him, right? So that's a wrestling move in the idea of the inside leg. You would just raise it up in any capacity, right?
Yeah.
You can, and even turning the other way and almost, I'm having a brain fart here, not a tabletop, but just essentially elevating the legs and then just not putting your own knees on the ground.
Right.
Because then you can, you allow Tony to get space.
Yeah, and it's just about scouting your opponent. Like when you're fighting Dan Kelly, you're going to have to watch out for his hips. And you know that going for takedowns, that he could use his judo to his advantage and use his leverage to get you on your back. And that's just something you'll know going in, that when you go for a certain type of takedown, some will be more effective than others.
For sure. But then it's one of the cases where it could be the case where you think about not doing it so much that you do it.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean?
It's a subconscious
happen.
Thing.
Yeah, and that might have happened to Kevin. He's young. He's 24,
exactly.
24 years old.
And,
right?
And I think that's the biggest takeaway for him. He's only like 24, 25. I think he just turned 25.
Yeah, he just turned 25. Yeah.
So he's, you know, the world is his oyster. Like he has any option that he can kind of do moving forward. Like, he lost, but, you know, it was a valiant fight until then. There was some good back and forth, but Tony Ferguson is on 10-fight win streak for a reason.
Yeah, and let's be real. I mean, Kevin Lee was ranked 7th.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he was a guy that worked really, really hard to get to the top only to have himself knocked down a peg. He worked hard to get to be 7th, but usually when you're 7th, you still need to win one or two fights to get into that top three and get that fight. He just happened to be around at the right time, and that I think the back and forth that he had on Fox with Tony certainly helped his position and helped him get to where he was. And sometimes you make your own opportunities, and Kevin Lee did that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, again, it wasn't a devastating finish. It was a tap. There was a couple of moments where he still showed moments of brilliance. And I can't remember what the submission was. I think it was
a triangle.
Yeah, a triangle.
Yeah,
he got the triangle when he eventually, from the armbar.
Mm-hmm.
So again, he showed that he is still tough as nails, but he got caught and, you know, he'll live to fight another day.
I couldn't believe that Khabib was ranked ahead of Tony Ferguson all this time.
It
doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if you look at the strength of schedule, so to speak.
Exactly.
Ferguson was beating top guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Khabib hasn't fought a top guy in, 3 years? He beat Daryl Horcher within the last 2 years. I don't think he beat Rafael Dos Anjos before Dos Anjos was the champion, which was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, it was quite a while before he was the champion.
Yeah, well, that has to do with more the way the rankings are, right? Like, again, and the criticism that sometimes goes along with it, where it doesn't necessarily make sense, and the fact that someone like Kevin Lee at 7th can fight, or Dan Henderson at 9th can fight Bisping.
Yeah, well, you look at who's running the rankings and who's voting. It's a lot of people from local city newspapers. It's, you know, you're not seeing guys like Ariel Helwani and, you know, John Morgan and Dan Stupp, like people that are really established journalists in the sport voting. And that's not to take anything away from the people that are voting. I'm sure they follow the sport, but it just, some of the ratings can concern me. Like, you know, there was a time where I was looking through, Kamaru Usman was on Ariel's show and he was complaining about the ratings. And I went and looked through and there were three or four people that didn't have him ranked. I'm thinking, these guys, did they forget about him? Did they not watch the sport? Somebody had, I'm trying to remember some of the names that were ranked by some people where he wasn't ranked. It was a confusing array of people.
Well, again, just like with judging, how that sometimes comes up into the sphere where in many ways it is a, you know, a judgment call. And it's their judgment call.
Right.
And, you know, in many ways, it's a glorified popularity contest. Like, it's not the same way as other sports where it's a number system or a point system, whatever the case may be. And, you know, I beat the third top guy, so now I'm second.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit of this and that and everything, and also the fact of how you finished them, how you beat them. So there's a lot of factors.
Do you worry about the judges?
Because
a lot of your game is about not taking damage and controlling.
Yeah, especially with the last one, I thought I did more than enough to win, especially outstriking him 2-1, 3-1 in regards to takedowns. The control time, I beat him a minute and a half, I think, more. You know, it's a learning lesson, and the way I look at it, yeah, it sucked because I didn't win. Obviously, I took home half my paycheck. But at the same time, I got to go and go to my after party and enjoy it with all the people that came out and supported me, my friends, family, and everything in between, and had an amazing time. And I'm very fortunate in what I've done on the outside stuff, where like all my sponsorships, all my outside endeavors basically pay just as much, if not more, than fighting. So it's a beautiful thing to, you know, even if I was to lose, I still have a component that doesn't hurt me. Exactly. I have a safety net that I don't, it doesn't hurt my pocket. Obviously, it would always be better.
It
hurts a little bit.
It could be better, yeah.
It could always be better. But my only two losses were superficial in some regards. Like, you know, I went to the judges and they, you know, I think my first loss could arguably been a draw in the capacity of, you know, he just had a really good third round, but the judges, for whatever reason, gave it a 10-8 round. At no point did I falter. I kept on pushing forward. He was definitely winning, but there's no point where it should have been a 10-8 round. And the second one, I think I should arguably won, but at the same time, you know, those are my two losses against two studs that, you know, at any given day. And I think actually the most important thing would be the fact that I didn't lose. I mean, sorry, they didn't win. I kind of lost the fight. So right. I think it was just moments where I allowed them to take away something, whether it was Thiago Santos, you know, pushing against the cage too much, and he was able to elbow me. And then with
Brad
Tavares, yeah. I think what the issue was, being completely honest, I think it was almost as if I was waiting for a back and forth when I should have just ran away with it. I think at some point I could, if I'm going to be completely honest and a little bit critical, I think I rested on my laurels a little bit in the sense that, oh, I'm winning. And in my mind, I'm winning. And if I don't feel danger, sometimes I don't necessarily, I didn't necessarily go for the kill. And that's what I really need to do with Dan.
That was a split, right?
No, it was unanimous for whatever reason. Yeah. And that's the bigger issue.
Right.
And, you know, I'm unlucky in Vegas. My only two losses are in Vegas.
Better not fight there again.
Never again. There or New York.
With Brad, do you take solace in him winning this weekend? He had a really dominant victory over Talos Latus. He was the 12th ranked guy, and he beat you by the narrowest of margins. Like, as a fighter, do you take solace in seeing something like that?
For sure. Him and Thiago, right? Like, Thiago Santos has knocked dead everyone else that he's fought.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, both gentlemen, the only reason why I got a W is because I didn't do enough to put a stamp on it. And, you know, it shows that I belong there in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brad was pretty overcome with emotion when I spoke to him after the fight because of what happened in Las Vegas. He can see Mandalay Bay from his house. So he was, I was happy for all the guys from Vegas that were able to get a win. And, I mean, Evan Dunham got a draw, which was good for him. I don't know if I would have scored it that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to see these guys from Vegas, you know, walk away with something and you know, put on a good show for the home crowd. Demetrius Johnson, speaking of putting on a show, that finish, I told him, like, Capcom should use that for a video game. Like,
yeah.
It was crazy.
Even one of my tweets, I was like, even if you couldn't even do it better in a video game.
Like, I was debating it with people in the back. I was like, there's no way he's ever practiced that. I go, it just looked too, like it was just something that happened in the moment. Yeah. And then we learned afterwards that he'd been practicing it for years.
Tremendous.
And that he has another one up his sleeve that he didn't tell anybody. He calls it the mousetrap, but he doesn't.
Tremendous.
He doesn't know what it is. He'd like, we don't know what it is. He hasn't. You know, he hasn't done it yet.
And that's why, you know, obviously him and Jones will always have the back and forth. Jones, for the pure capacity of who he beat, because one of the big arguments is you have to have the actual competition and you have to have the rivals. You know, the same issue happened at some point with Anderson Silva, where there wasn't really, you know, he was always going to win. That's how it has always seemed until, you know, very much the similarities of Ray Borg, where a wide man steps up and proves everyone wrong. Right. I think at this point, we all kind of like, okay, DJ's going to win until he doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what's going to happen.
Well, here's the weird thing about it, and here's why I think Demetrius is just so good. Take all the John Jones stuff out of the equation, the drugs and all of, you know, all of his vices that have plagued him for the past couple of years. When he, if you said he's going to fight Gustafson tomorrow, You'd probably in your head be like, Gustafson has a shot. Gustafson, right now, Gustafson looks really good. He could beat him. When he fought Cormier a couple months ago. I was like, people, you know, I was like, Cormier could beat him. Cormier is like a world-class wrestler. Mm-hmm. If he gets, you know, the best of those grappling exchanges, who knows? Anthony Johnson, when he was scheduled to fight him, you know, Anthony's a heavy hitter. He could beat him. And I don't know if that's a weight class thing, but with Demetrius, you're just like, that guy's got no shot.
Yeah.
Especially, like, watching him this past weekend, I can't think of anybody who would come close to, you know,
Benavidez, round three. No,
Benavidez was in the back, and they were kind of talking to each other afterwards,
yeah.
In a playful manner.
Yeah.
But he was like, I'm back in four. Benavidez said he was, I don't know if I should be saying this because it's backstage stuff, but he said he'll be back in about 4 or 5 months.
True.
So then we'll see what Joe's got. I mean, Joe was supposed to fight Ben Wynn, and Ben Wynn looked spectacular in that last fight.
Yep.
So against Tim Elliott. Beat him in the first 40 seconds, if I remember.
Yep.
So that's another guy that's coming up. But if you said Ben Wynn's going to fight Demetrius Johnson, Demetrius would be like a 13-1 favorite.
Yeah, 100%. And even the Cejudo and Pettis that are going to fight, you still, at the same time, it's like, well, he already beat him, and, you know, he might be too young. So those are the things that are going to go through
your
mind. Did
you hear what happened with Henry?
No.
Okay, well, my thoughts are with him. He was in one of the fires in California.
Oh, yes.
And an initial report said that he actually jumped from a second story, and broke his ankle. But reports apparently that's not true, but he lost his gold medal in the fire.
Whoa.
So, my thoughts are with Henry Cejudo. He's a great guy, very nice guy. And he was one of those affected by the wildfires going on in California right now.
Madness. Wildfires I've been taking that in. It's gone out of nowhere.
Photo?
Yeah, out of nowhere. It was like 5,000 acres, and then all of a sudden, poof.
Yeah.
It's now 500,000. You know what I mean? And it's all of wine country. It's all
Sonoma,
their wine. Yeah,
Napa,
exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he was affected by that. He had to jump from the second story of a building to escape a fire.
And
lost his gold medal in the process, which
is horrible.
Horrifying.
Yeah, so, I wonder if there's like a replacement
situation. I think they do. Yeah, there's got to be.
Yeah, especially in a
that
situation.
Kind of
case.
Yeah. It's not like he's selling it to some pawn shop.
Exactly.
You know? Like he worked hard to get that gold medal, obviously. Any Olympian that has won a gold medal, unless you play women's hockey, has worked very hard. No disrespect to Team USA and Team Canada. The
just crush.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll erase that. But Henry Cejudo, hopefully his fight is not in jeopardy, but obviously bigger things at play in California.
Yeah, exactly.
That go well beyond him having to fight Sergio Pettis, which would be coming up in December in Detroit. Apparently, again, from Pettis' camp, they said that they've heard from Cejudo's camp or through the grapevine that everything is still a go. So we'll see what happens from there. But again, thoughts with Henry Cejudo. Fabricio Werdum gets a last-minute challenger in Walt Harris. The craziest thing about this fight were the odds. Werdum was less than a 2-1 favorite against Walt Harris. It's like one of the biggest gifts since Mayweather versus McGregor in terms of odds.
Yeah, pretty much, especially on the last minuteness of it.
Yeah, last minute notice. Walt Harris is a good fighter, but he's diving into like the deepest of deep pools.
Arguably one of the greatest heavyweights ever.
Well, definitely the greatest, probably grappling heavyweight ever. I mean, him and Nogueira, you could have a conversation, but
Werdum
in terms of he submitted him, and Werdum in terms of accomplishments, like in terms of his how decorated he is with grappling,
Kane.
It's hard to debate. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Walt Harris lost in a pretty easy fashion, and I kind of joked about it on social media afterwards. Fabricio thinks he is now next in line for a title, but I beg to differ.
I think
when you look at Ngannou versus Overeem coming up, that's probably the eliminator for that particular title.
100%.
But Verdum's 40. Like I can see why he keeps calling out for a title shot.
For sure. And again, just like with Kevin Lee, if you put it out there and you keep on putting yourself in a position and he arguably won against Alistair. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He dropped Alistair.
I thought he won that fight.
Yeah.
I had him winning that fight.
Yeah, exactly. I can understand why he is upset. And his only loss in the last, I think since 2012, other than the Alistair fight, was Stipe.
Yeah.
Stipe.
And that's it.
Yeah.
His striking looks sharp under Rafael Cordero.
Yep. I was in there. I was in Brazil during 2012 when he fought in Belo Horizonte.
Yeah.
So I watched that live. And from then, his striking has been amazing. Even what he did with
Kane, especially.
Kane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kane.
His Kane, that was mostly a striking-based attack. It wasn't a choke out of nowhere. Like, he forced Kane to shoot for that takedown and then grab the neck.
But C-level Kane
wins. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Right now, C-level Kane isn't fighting anybody because C-level Kane is hurt and might not fight again.
I just really hope with someone like that, when he won all the wins that he did have, he was very smart with his money and hopefully invested it in the right things. Because who knows, he might be having to live off of what he's earned already.
Yeah, which, I mean, for most fighters, he did better than a lot could expect, but I know what you're saying. And he still does want to fight, it seems. He's still training and he's trying to get back in there for next year, but I don't know. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, just that one little comment that he made and they pulled him from that fight. Remember when he was talking about CBDs?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's crazy. Which is now going to be legal next year.
Yep. WADA supersedes everything, right?
Yeah.
The interesting thing that's going to happen is the cannabinoids aspects in regards to flower, it's a similar situation in regards to it's going to be considered a supplement where you won't be able to really do, you won't be able to rely on the flower form. You'd have to do the synthetic, I don't think it's technically synthetic, but they would extract the CBDs from the flower because if you just do the actual flower, there's some capacity of the the THC getting itself in there, right?
So
it's essentially a tainted supplement, right? So it's still due diligence.
But only in competition.
Yep, only in competition.
We'll have to see, I guess, what happens with that. That's interesting. And I hope that the NFL is paying attention to that because 100%. It could help so many of their players. In terms of the rest of this card, obviously the Venata and Green fight was a spectacular fight. I don't know how that ended up becoming a draw. I thought it was pretty clear and dry for Venata personally, but it was a great fight. It was a lot of fun to watch. And seeing Tom Dukinwa lose was surprising to me.
Yeah, that was very surprising.
And Babulatov, in the fashion that he lost in the first minute, the first 2 minutes of the fight, Moraga, that cross was, that
hurt.
Was crazy.
Hurt watching.
It looked like it hurt. Moraga, when he first came to the back afterwards, wouldn't talk to the media because he was so overcome with emotion. He was so, and you saw, Cormier, did you see the post-fight interview where Cormier was trying to get, he's like, come on, what do you got to say? You know, this is such a huge moment. The reason he couldn't say anything, he was so overcome with emotion.
Wow.
He was like, it was just such an important win for him.
For sure.
He couldn't, he couldn't get past it. And again, as we mentioned, Brad Tavares beating Talis Leitas in a very, very dominant fashion.
Very valiant fashion, sure.
Let's move on to some other topics. Ferguson beats Lee. Looks like he's next in line for Connor. That's what Dana White's saying. Do you think he can beat Connor, and do you think Connor can beat him?
I think it's definitely an even matchup. Obviously, the more precision striker would be Connor, I would say. But that, like we both spoke of, Tony Ferguson's a savage, and he's a big chaos monkey. He's just literally going to try and hurt you in every capacity. And I think that's where his, whatever arm something choke that he can do as well,
and also
like any type of gator thing looking thing that he can do, he can definitely attack Connor if he gets him on the ground and go in a scramble and get his neck in some capacity or his arm, or scramble to the next thing. Obviously,
if I'm Tony, I'd consider even pulling guard in this fight.
Why not? Yeah. Why not? I think he needs to bully him in a very chaotic fashion to win. And I think Connor just needs to, do Connor.
Yeah, if Connor does Connor, basically, in the early rounds, he can take him out.
Yeah.
I think he's got the power and the precision to be able to hit Tony because Tony's very hittable.
Yep.
But if he burns himself out early, he's in big trouble. If he gets to the ground, he's in big trouble.
If he tries to take him down,
Ferguson
just
has more paths to victory for sure.
Yep, yep.
But Connor's path is a very good path, as he's proven in the past.
Uh huh. Yep. And he can, again, do it in the first, do it in the second, whatever the case may be. I think it's a case of not necessarily I don't even know if it's a subconscious ego component, but I think with Tony Ferguson, it's an ego thing when he gets hit. He allows it. He feeds off of it. He kind of smiles off at it and, tries to just essentially eat whatever the guy's throwing at him and then just give him more.
Right. But I don't think he's fought anybody with the power of Conor, the immediate power of Conor McGregor.
Barbosa, in regards to kicks, I would say, in regards to the striking, but not the precision.
Yeah.
Barbosa's just a thunderous, a thunderous whack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, Ferguson's pretty good at protecting the body, but when it comes to getting hit in the head, again, with Connor, you're talking about a different type of striker.
Lando, in that last minute fight.
Yeah, Lando almost took him out.
Yeah.
I don't think Lando's on Connor's level. Connor's really, I don't know. I think Ferguson could open as a favorite in that fight. That wouldn't surprise me. But that being said, a lot of the odds are based on what Vegas thinks where the action's going to be faded in.
Especially the early opening, I think so. Especially if you factor in that he got knocked out in his last fight, although it's not mixed martial arts,
It's still something.
He's
and he lost to Diaz, and I think that Ferguson is better than Diaz pretty much everywhere.
Yep, yeah, yeah. It's just, well, we all know that Nate Diaz is one of the largest.
He does walk around at around 340 pounds, from what I understand.
Exactly. Largest heavyweight.
He is a pretty big guy, actually, Nate. I was with him in Edmonton. We were watching some of the fights in the back before he went out to corner Melendez. He's a pretty big guy for a 155er. He's very large.
He's a small 170.
Yeah, he's a small 170.
That's what it is.
As Rory McDonald proved back at, was it the Rogers Center? Was that 129?
I think it was Vegas or Vancouver.
No, it was in Toronto. Oh. The one against Nate was in Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
I was there.
Yep.
I'm just trying to remember which one. Yeah, I think it was the one at the Rogers Center, but he was throwing him around like a rag doll.
Yeah, it was Woodley in BC. That's what I remembered. Yep.
Yeah, it was Woodley in BC. That was the fight where people left during Demetrius Johnson's fight. Terrible fans.
So rude.
Terrible fans.
So rude.
No disrespect to those in Vancouver. I'm sure that next time he fights there, you'll stay because of how awesome he's been lately.
Yeah.
Demetrius was like, the criticism on Demetrius was he can't finish anybody. Now he's finishing everybody.
With like video game. Yeah, yeah, with video game precision.
But that fight, he was so, like, I can't remember seeing him so dominant from start to finish.
Yeah, even just he was just sitting on him at some point when he was grabbing his leg and Ray Borg was just grabbing his leg for dear life and he just basically just sat on him and was like,
trying to get scrambles.
All right, good, out.
And every scramble that he went for, like, Demetrius was just two steps ahead of him. So Bisping and GSP, they're coming to Toronto later this week with UFC President Dana White. What did you think of the press conference last week? Did you get a chance to watch it?
Yeah, no, Bisping is good at what he does. You know what I mean? Like, he's good at stirring the pot. And I think it's, you know, I was one of the ones that said, you know, GSP, he's going to be cool, calm, and it doesn't really affect him. I think it would affect him in regards to a little bit more than Nick Diaz. Because obviously Nick Diaz, you know, You can kind of class that in a section where it's like, oh, well, you know, what he's saying, it doesn't bother me because it's just kind of, he's just kind of saying it in the way he's saying it. Where I think Bisping is a little bit more articulate in the verbal beating that he's trying to put on him. And I think, you know, him touching his bicep and he pushed him. There is a capacity. I can understand why Bisping gets under anyone's skin.
Yeah, George looked pretty annoyed.
Yeah.
I asked him afterwards, I go, are you amused? Are you more amused or more annoyed? He's like, I'm a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least he was honest with me.
Yeah.
He could have just said, oh, yeah, I'm amused. But you could tell that he doesn't like being around Bisping in that setting.
No, no. And especially because they've trained and, you know, I think with George, he's a very, you know, he's a very classy guy and he looks at mixed martial arts a certain way. He never had to sell it in the way that Bisping did, right? Like he was, again, he was a product of his era in the capacity of who do you have better, who's better to represent and be the face of mixed martial arts, what was at one point considered human cockfighting, than a polite French Canadian.
Yeah.
You know
exactly.
What I mean? Like
who's so technical.
Yeah, who's just so technical. He's going to beat you on points. And again, that is, I would assume, his path to victory. Like, I know he's doing a lot in regards to different striking capacities. And, you know, he really prefers, like, his karate and all that component and kempo and all that jazz that he's incorporating and always is incorporated, right, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you'd have to look at him and know that his keys to victory would definitely be a route like Tim Kennedy versus Michael Bisping, right?
Yeah, the takedowns.
Yep, takedowns, pushing him against the wall, trying to make it gritty.
I think that's why George is trying to get bigger.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, Bisping never doesn't have a full gas on him, tank on him, right? You know what I mean? Like, he's known for his cardio. So, and he has been in there many times against great people and has been finishing. He finished arguably the best middleweight,
right?
Luke Rockhold, like that is arguably the most physical, talent-wise, athlete in the middleweight division. And you know, part of it was Luke's ego and his, you know, taking him lightly, even though he's already beaten him.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact that George and Bisping have trained before is a bonus for or a positive and an opportunity for both of them.
Right, and you know, I think that with George, this was the perfect fight for him to come back. I don't think he takes Bisping lightly, but I think it's certainly a good opportunity to win a second belt for him, and a good opportunity for, you know, based on what he's hoping to accomplish from his comeback, to me, it's the perfect fight for him.
For sure.
I don't think as a matchup, it's a great matchup for him. I think that there's a lot of things that are going to be difficult for him to overcome in this particular fight.
Yeah. No. Again, George hasn't fought my whole UFC career.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I actually commented to George the other day because he was talking to Francis Ngannou backstage. And I said to him, the first time I interviewed Ngannou, you had just announced your comeback, and I asked him what he thought of you, and he said he had never seen your fights because he's only been fighting for 3 years.
Yeah.
And didn't have a TV. Like, he didn't know about the sport.
Yeah. Because he's from France,
yeah,
right?
He's from France, obviously. And he walked into a boxing gym, and a guy was like, you should train in MMA. And he was like, okay.
Yeah.
But at that time, like, George had pretty much already stepped away from the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting when you look at those two things. And they were talking in French and having
a good
time.
Yeah, for sure.
So I thought that was pretty interesting, right? It just shows how long he's been away from the game for. But also, you know, just kind of how legendary George is. He can come back, be on the main event in New York. Have you been training with him lately? Have you been seeing a lot of what George is doing?
In some capacity, he's been doing a lot of his training in New York as well. So
I saw
the
picture of him from this weekend with him and Jake Shields and Gary Tonin.
Yeah.
Like, he's training with these killers, like ground game submission killers. Yep. And Donaher was there, obviously.
Yep. Donaher, and there's also Francis Carmont was there as well. And then Yuki as well. Mm-hmm. It's a 170 from TriStar as well.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of him. What's
his deal? He's in the region. He has some, I believe, some judo. He also, you know, an athlete through and through. I don't know how many fights he actually has. He's, you know, he's a regional fighter at this point, but still great in the gym. Another great body to have.
Yeah, there are three TriStar guys on that card. It's Eamon Zahabi.
Yep.
Joe Duffy and then GSP.
Yeah.
So who have you been working with of those guys?
Well, obviously, George has been all over the place, and his is more specific in regards to his training. And I've been around Duffy and Eamon the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's just weight class.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's no point.
Bigger than them, yeah.
but last camp, I did a lot of work, actually, with Duffy. He is so quick and is looking so great. I'm really excited to see what he's going to do with Vic.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun two guys with a real boxing background.
Yep.
So yeah. That'll be a lot of fun. And both guys who really think that they deserve to be, you know, higher up in the mix.
100%.
So that'll be a very fun fight. I'm curious to see what GSP and Bisping looks like, really. It's one of those things where I can't visualize it all that well, because I can visualize Bisping with his strengths and GSP with takedowns, but none of it makes sense to me. I can't process it properly.
Yeah, well,
does that make sense?
No, 100%, because again, the whole fight itself kind of came out of left field.
Yeah,
I think for everyone, right?
It's like two different weight classes.
Yeah, exactly. Two different weight classes.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really thought 170, especially with the whole Whitaker thing, kind of threw everything on its axle again, right? Because at one point it would have just been Whitaker versus Bisping, right? So, you know, Bisping, I'm really happy for him as well, regardless of the situation. He's one of the good guys, despite what you think of him in regards to all the kind of guff he'll give people throughout, right? Selling the fights. But he's a sweetheart deep down. And, you know, he's had so many ups and so many downs. And it's kind of like the icing on the cake, depending on whether he retires or not. Obviously, he's hinted after this fight he might retire, which would be the ultimate FU to Luke Rockhold.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. In that whole division, really.
Really.
Yoel Romero, all those guys.
Yep.
Well, you mentioned that Bisping's a sweetheart. I think our next guest begs to differ. We're going to be speaking with Jorge Masvidal. Jorge is fighting Stephen Thompson. I don't know, have you trained with Stephen? Because Stephen's done some stuff at TriStar.
Not at TriStar, but I did. He was in the mix in regards to when I was at Wyman's.
Okay.
Yep.
So Steve, yeah, right, because they're brother-in-laws.
Yep.
Yeah, so Stephen Thompson, Wonder Boy, looked fantastic last year at Madison Square Garden, but was narrowly defeated on the cards by Tyron Woodley in an excellent fight. The second fight, not so much.
No one wants to lose the sixth round.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll talk to Jorge Masvidal right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Right, we're joined now by welterweight contender Jorge Masvidal. You know, Jorge, myself and Elias Theodoru, we were just chatting a minute ago about Michael Bisping, and Elias was saying he's a nice guy. Do you agree?
No, I wouldn't say he's a nice guy. No.
You have some problems with him. Where does that date back to?
Well, it dates back to. So I just never really liked the dude for his antics and stuff. He'll do anything for a like, you know. If they told him to get famous, you're gonna have to like hit a child. He'd probably be the guy to do it, you know, because he's done some pretty stupid things, I think. But where his hatred comes from is that I was asked a question about the situation of him versus Joel Romero, And I don't know what part offended him, either me saying that he didn't want to fight Romero or me saying that Romero would retire him. You know, one of those two things offended him because he went on an onslaught of me and stuff and saying like a bunch of corny things. And to tell you the truth, who is that guy? Well, yeah, he might have a belt around his waist, but he's a punk. You know, he's a coward. He's dodging numerous fighters at his weight class. I don't even care to talk about him anymore. Interviewers have been asking me about him a lot. Like, I'm not going to make this guy famous.
And he might be done, right? This could be it for him. He says he's probably going to retire after this next fight anyways.
Of course. To be the only champion to ever fight a top 10 dude to defend the belt in multiple occasions. So it'd be fitting for him to be the only guy that did that, you know?
So you're training right now for Stephen Thompson. Is your strategy to try to offset his kickboxing and his kind of weird style, or just to be Jorge Masvidal and be, you know, get your success from what you've done well your whole career?
My strategy, and I'm going to tell you, and hopefully you guys don't go and tell him. I'm going to be honest with you and tell him my strategy. I'm going to punch him in the face, and I'm just going to keep doing that till he figures out a way out for himself, you know?
Do you think it's a case that he won't be able to handle your power, or is it just the case of you just doing you and getting what you want?
It's a case of me and him are both in jail, and we're sharing a cell, and you would know who's doing the laundry, who's clipping the toenails, and who's preparing the food for the other. That type of situation.
Well, Steven says he wants to bring the fight to you. He wants to go toe to toe with you.
That guy's never about to fight to nobody. Don't buy Wolf tickets and the dream selling is doing. That guy plays the bicycle counterpart every time. If guys rush at him, he could do well, you know. But if not, he doesn't take a step forward. That's just not him. He doesn't go forward pressuring guys, throwing bombs, you know.
Well, if that's the case, because you plan on, you know, punching him and taking the fight to him, are you concerned about his counterpunching? Or obviously, you know, it's the case of the fight, and you, like you said, you have a lot of strategy ahead. What do you feel about his counterpunching and your ability to counter that counterpunching?
I feel like I could do a lot of things with him. You know, there's certain ranges you just shouldn't give it to him because that's where he's best at, you know. There's a lot of ranges where he can't fight. That's why he can't put pressure because he doesn't know how to fight. He was just taught one thing. His dad forced him into one martial arts, and you know, he doesn't really do well in a lot of other ranges. So he's going to have to fight with me. I'm not just a striker or a guy
for
that
sure.
Can shoot takedowns or stuff. I could fight at all ranges, man. I've been doing it my whole career. He hasn't. He only has one range.
You know, when Rory McDonald fought him, he brought in Raymond Daniels. Tyron Woodley used Sage Northcutt to try to get used to that karate stance and the karate striking. Are you doing anything of that sort preparing for this?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm watching like Bruce Lee movies every day. I've seen The Karate Kid like 3 times this week at least. You know, I'm just keeping myself in the karate mindset as much as I can right now so I can see everything coming.
The state of the welterweight division right now is kind of up in the air. Do you think a win over him puts you right in title contention?
Without question, it makes me not title contention. It puts me as the number one contender, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're beating a guy who fought him twice.
Violence, if you want to see violence and stuff, if you want to see something else, something weird that doesn't quite make sense, but whatever, they put it together and now they're selling it to people, yeah, but if you want to see pure violence, somebody that's going to get in the cage and look to hurt his opponent and give everything he's got, bodily harm taken or given, just for that belt, then yeah, put me in there. If not, whatever, they could get another WWF fighter and, you know, give him a title shot, or maybe GSP drops to 70, so who knows, bro.
Well, one guy who talks a lot about the champion is your teammate, Colby Covington. He says, you know, Tyron Woodley's not really American Top Team, he's never in the gym in Florida. Is that true? Is that something you agree with?
Yeah. You could say that, yeah, Woodley's not in the gym often. He's not, like, constantly there, but he was top team a long ago. And those guys got their own beef, man. I'm not going to sit here and, like, talk about their beef. You know, that's their beef, man.
Are you and Colby close? Colby always says it's you and him are the ones that take the really hard fights in the welterweight division. You guys are tight?
No, Colby's my partner. We're, like, I'm cool with Woodley, but Colby's like my little brother, you know. We've known each other for quite some time. We've lived together, trained together several years, beating each other's asses. So it's a different relationship with me and Colby, you know. Yeah, we're good friends, man.
Terrific. Going into it, kind of talking about Thompson, we already talked about, do you think he will take the risks? Do you think he will actually take it to you?
I don't. I mean, even if in his mind he said, I'm going to take this risk, it's one thing saying you're going to skydive, and then when you're up there and you're looking out the plane door and you're like, hey, wait up, this looks a little high, never mind, you know? He's not going to, he might say it, he might even think it, you know, he might even be lying to himself right now saying he's going to fight. But as soon as he takes the leather in his mouth, he's going to get on that bicycle.
You've been fighting for a long time. I heard you chatting with my colleague, Dwayne Finley from Flow Combat. You were telling him you got into your first fight when you were in second grade?
That I could remember. I had fights in, like, preschool and in, like, daycares and stuff before that. But, like, that I could actually remember, like, busting somebody up and having to use all my might to what I thought was at the time survival. Yeah, it was, like, right around there.
Jeez, you have. I'm picturing my son. My son's in grade two. I don't know, man. You guys come from different walks.
Definitely. I mean, my son, if you ask any of my friends that have met him or anybody that's seen my son, he's just over the top aggressive. You know, like the teachers tell us, he's already getting into scraps, and he's a 2-year-old. You know, it's just in the blood, man. Like we were hunters back in the day. We were the village protectors. You know, that's when we're talking about that bloodline. My bloodline was like, if our village had to fight another village, instead of the whole village having to fight, they would just send me and my kind, and we would wreck shop. And now our village was able to thrive and eat and have women and all types of craziness because of guys like me and my bloodline.
Well, I love the interview you did with Robin Black. You guys went for brunch after your last fight with Maya. It seems like you had learned a lot from that fight. Would you agree with that? You know, did you take away a lot from that last experience?
From the Damian Maya fight, definitely, man. I learned a bunch of things. I mean, I knew a bunch of these things going into the fight, but it's a damn shame, bro. I mean, it could have gone my way based on a lot of things and the damage that I was doing, you know?
Absolutely. You know, you've been saying you're going on an easy money tour. Do you have, like, any easy money rankings, you know, guys that you think you could take care of pretty easily that you want to see across the cage from you at some point?
I want to see Maya across the cage at some point, you know? That's all that matters to me. If I get that belt, that'll be somebody I'm definitely defending against, you know? Or when I get that belt.
Well, Colby's fighting him next. I guess you guys have probably been working on a game plan for him to beat Maya. Are there certain things you noticed from fighting Maya that you think he can really learn a lot from? Things that, little holes that you see after the fact?
Definitely. Definitely. I've told him a lot of things where his strong suit is. And, I mean, we've talked about, like, I won't say too much of it now, but we've talked about a lot of things that he can't do with this guy, you know. So he's more than ready.
And finally, you used to fight at 155, big fight over the weekend, Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee. What were your thoughts on that fight? Is there anything you saw in that fight that you'd like to share with us?
I didn't get to see that fight. I just saw the highlights of it, like triangle and stuff in some early parts of the round. I got to see the Demetrius fight, and then I had to kind of split from where I was at. So I didn't get to see the main event, you know, but I did see the Demetrius Johnson fight. Let me tell you, that was an amazing fight. That guy is world class. You know, he's in another planet all by himself.
Yeah, you look at him and you kind of think, I don't know who can beat this guy. He's just the distance between how good he is and how good the next guy is just seems like a chasm.
Yeah, I definitely want to see him moving up in weight and with that disadvantage of size and height and power, see if he could still be as successful because he's just so good everywhere that I could still see him racking up numerous wins at the next weight class.
I was at the event this weekend, and I spoke with him, and he doesn't really have any interest in fighting at 135. He just says that he's the perfect size for someone at 125, that he feels moving up it just puts him at such a disadvantage against so many different guys in terms of size.
But that's what I want to see, though, because that's the only thing that I think would could make it fair, man, because he's just so damn good at 125. I don't see nothing but him destroying people, you know?
Do you think it's because of at this point he needs a little bit of a handicap, like you said, to make it fair? Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't know, man. I'm saying, like, I just want to see the challenge of it. Like, I want to see him fighting the world's best at the next weight class to see if he could still, which I think that he could still do it. He would be a small 135er. You know, you look at a guy like Dominic Cruz,
yep,
and TJ Dillashaw, they're a lot bigger than him, but I still want to see those fights. You know, those fights would interest me heavily because I don't see anybody at 125 right now. I'm lying. I think Henry Cejudo in the near future and guys like Sergio Pettis are going to be able to fight him. You know, maybe not this year right now, but Henry's a super athlete that's ultra tough. That's a great grappler. I could see him giving him a great fight. Same as Sergio Pettis, you know. But as of right now, Mighty Mouse is just on the league of his own, you know. So I want to, since he broke the record, I would like to see him at 35, but whatever.
Yeah, more of a legacy component at this point, right? What do you think of him versus Garbrandt? Because Garbrandt has talked about, after his next fight with TJ, that possibly him coming down to 125. What do you think if the 135ers come to him?
Oh, that'd be intense, bro. If those guys can make the weight cut and not be drained, too, that's a big thing to me, too, you know. I don't want to see a guy go down on weight and really quite can't make the weight and he gets all sluggish, you know. But that'd be awesome. If they could just make the weight and not kill themselves, that'd be something to see, man.
I know you're tired of talking about Bisping, but I'm just realizing you guys are on the same card in New York. Is he going to have to mind his P's and Q's in New York and make sure he stays out of your way?
Well, as long as he doesn't get close to me, you know, like things like that, because that's the only time I'll get weird is if somebody's getting close to me in the touchy stuff, you know. I'm not like, I don't know. I don't like people touching me, man, or getting close to me or pretending to touch me, you know. Like, you see me at Wayne's, I keep my distance away from everybody. I respect every individual. I try not to get in nobody's face. I don't think I've ever really even got into any type of scuffle. At a Wayne, I've had words exchanged, but it's at a safe distance. I don't try to violate nobody's space, you know, because I know that me, myself, I don't forgive nobody if you violate my space.
All right, Jorge. Well, we appreciate all your time today. You can catch Jorge Masvidal versus Stephen Thompson on the main card of UFC 217 at Madison Square Garden in New York. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great day, man. I love Canada.
That was Jorge Masvidal. Very strong words about Michael Bisping. Thinks he's going to be in title contendership with a win over Stephen Wonderboy Thompson at UFC 217. Elias Theodoro, thanks so much for joining us. Joe Valtellini's back next week. We'll talk about everything that's going on in the world of MMA. Catch you then on the TSN MMA Show.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.